This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for the chance to speak about this very important topic for higher education, namely research. It's increasingly clear in the kind of extraordinary times that we are existing in, and those extraordinary times, they have a sharper focus, as was trailed in yesterday's budget, making the case for all aspects of higher education are key. And what I want to do in this presentation is talk a little bit about research. The time has never been more ripe for the sector to vigorously promote the benefits and advantages of research that underpin clearly necessary to underpin the knowledge-led economy that Britain must have to meet the challenges of the 21st century. The fact that the universities in the UK are certainly global providers of higher education and on all metrics are leaders in the generation of research should be one of those reasons we heard earlier to be cheerful. The fact is that we have the generation of high quality research in the UK, and that then needs to feed through to its driving of the UK economy. The benefits of research in the higher education sector should be clear, and I don't need to elucidate them to this audience, but perhaps I might highlight one or two of the points. The fact that it drives innovation, both locally and nationally, is clear. Also, one cannot underestimate the exposure of today's graduates to research in the way that makes them think about what the higher education sector offers is very clear. Is very clearly important in informing the opinion makers of the future. Exposing them to the research process and activity is clearly very important. In looking at the pre-election statements from both the Conservative and Liberal manifestos, it's clear that these ideas have been thought about. For example, the Conservatives talked about Britain's world-class science and engineering base underpinning successful high-tech economy. The Liberals talked about Britain's future depending on a vibrant research base. Indication that the need for research budgets to be long-term and sustainable so that planning can take place was also clear. We now need to see how that feeds through to the comprehensive spending review. This is the time now to influence that debate. We've heard in several of the talks earlier, we shouldn't make the case for special pleading. We should make the case on the quality of the arguments that some of these areas need to be protected, but not at their current levels of budget. That is not a sustainable argument in the current situation. Looking back, perhaps what might now be regarded as prehistory, Lord Drayson talked about the need to have a broad base of research in the UK so that interdisciplinary research and world-class leadership can be delivered. I think this is very necessary, and it needs to be ensured that the funding mechanisms that are put in place ensure that this is true. Perhaps we could explore this in a little bit more detail. One of the things that, of course, has kind of corroded the discussion in the UK in the last few years has been the impact agenda. The impact agenda has both been divisive and probably distracting. That's not to say that it isn't a highly important agenda and one that we need to sign up to. However, I think both extremes in the debate that's gone on have not been helpful to us as a sector. So, for example, the argument, what I would call the ivory towers argument, blue skies, high quality excellence, and don't question why we're doing it, I think is just as problematic as the we must see the direct impact of this in the immediate future. Both of those are not useful to the UK higher education sector. Plenty of examples can be pointed out where curiosity-driven research has eventually led to multi-billion dollar industries. That should not be forgotten. In a very interesting talk yesterday evening by Sir Peter Gluckman, who is the chief scientific advisor to the New Zealand government, he made a very telling point that in the mid-90s, the New Zealand government veered strongly towards the impact agenda, and it made it clear that writing a business case was more important than being able to write a scientific case in obtaining research funding. He claimed last night in his in his presentation at the New Zealand High Commission, this was the most debilitating time for New Zealand research in living memory. I think we need to remember that here in the UK. Okay, Higher Ambitions, another document which we heard earlier was probably propping up tables within Whitehall. Nevertheless, says some really interesting things about concentration. What I'm not going to do, going back to one of the earlier talks, is a case of special pleading for the fact that you should protect the research intensives at the expense of everyone else. However, the key point is that world-class research needs to be thought about very carefully how it's going to be funded, and the mechanisms that put in place are seen to drive efficiency within the sector. This is an indication of the funding of research in the UK. The total investment in universities, it says by government, I amended this slide and got the number wrong. It's actually the total amount of research funding is 6 billion. Just over 50% of that comes from the government directly. That means that we can see that the sorts of restrictions on funding streams that were being talked about are going to have an effect, and means we need to respond to this cleverly. Okay, this again is not a case of special pleading. It's a case of actually what is the situation currently in the UK as it stands. There are strong indications that research is already concentrated. 80% of comparative peer review funding and QR from the Hefke lines goes to around 30 institutions. Evidence suggests that there is a correlation. I mean, one would expect this to a certain extent, but that the correlation means that the money from charities, business and other sources flows more strongly to where the concentration already is. I'll come back to some reasons in a moment why that may be. And research concentration tends to have a subject-specific dependence, much more strongly based in the high-cost infrastructure subjects, biology, chemistry, mechanical engineering, less so in the humanities subjects. Now, it's very interesting to hear the lecture from our colleague from Penn State earlier, in the sense that we should look at how other systems have evolved. This is effectively a recasting of his figures into the number of institutions of different types as they're regarded in the US. So, as he said, the number of universities who would be regarded as what we describe as universities probably numbers just under 2,000. However, only around 300 of those, 280, would be regarded as research intensive. I think that's an interesting thing that we need to reflect on in the UK higher education sector. What factors should be driving our thinking? There's no doubt that our international competition are already changing. Look at the drive in Denmark, for example, through amalgamation of universities primarily designed to increase the provision of research infrastructure in a sustainable way. France, as we know, is mandating its universities to think together regionally, again, to meet research challenges. And also, if we look at Germany, the funding of the research elite has been a very key policy of the current government. There's also the changing nature of research, the idea of a lone scientist working in their own lab to come up with the eureka moment still exists, but nevertheless, the idea of interdisciplinarity and large teams of researchers are really important to tackle the key problems of today. And the way that universities work to structure themselves and work together are really important in being able to make that an efficient process. Therefore, we need to accelerate innovation, and some of that innovation needs to be driven by the financial environment. Okay, so what are the challenges and ways ahead we might look at? The sector must be bold and seek radical solutions. There are already very good examples of shared services. Shared services, for example, the JANET network must be one of the jewels in the crown of that, the fact that we all work together with the provision of joining us together in terms of information technology. There are other examples of working together. On the research side, I think, again, going back to the one of the previous talks, there is no doubt that outside universities, there is a kind of myth about our inefficiency and a kind of lack of management of some of our activities. I can't think of more activity than looking at the provision of high-cost research infrastructure, how much senior management times that takes up at research-intensive universities. It is a big cost line in our budgets. We need, and we do think very carefully about how we provide that most efficiently at our own institutions. That then leads on to the thinking about how we could offer new and bold solutions regionally. We've heard this idea about diversity of mission. Diversity of mission means that we need also, this word collaboration is used. Collaboration is a much misused word, and also is a bit of a dangerous word to use in the higher education sector. If you kind of look at it, the kind of universities in the UK have been bred almost perfectly to be competing organisations. They're almost the perfect competing beasts, as it were. This is what evolution has taken us to. It's taken us to the wrong place to really meet the challenges that we now see ahead. This really does require us to think about changing our mindsets, both as managers and as institutions. There are already very good examples, but I think we need to go much further than this. For example, the pooling initiatives in Scotland, I think, give us lessons to learn. Super, West Chem, East Chem, etc. I take an example from the local, my local, in terms of Science City. Driven by our local regional development agency, it has caused the two large research universities in the West Midlands, ourselves and Birmingham, to think much more carefully in certain selected areas about how we work together to avoid duplication. This has been a very educating experience for us as senior managers and something that we can learn from. There are other examples as well, the White Rose Consortium. Also, the research driven by the research councils and HEFCE, I feel we need to look at more national models of coordination of expensive, high-quality infrastructure. Without this high-quality infrastructure, it's certainly true that the science, engineering, and STEM and medicine base is likely to suffer against our international competitors. Finally, we need to think about international consortia. This is probably the most difficult, and maybe at this stage a step too far, but nevertheless, those who think boldest may be able to take advantage of this. So, for example, earlier there was reference to an article recently appeared in the Chronicle of Higher Education by Marginson from Melbourne. His idea about the multiversity, a university that genuinely was global, had a governance structure that acted as a single entity but was spread across the world, needs to be looked at. This is another way that we can sustain high-quality, strong infrastructure. Thank you very much.